5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, less than a week left to vote. Let's start with some piping hot spite to get us to the finish line.
Okay.
Whose vote are you going to cancel out with yours?
Whose vote am I going to cancel out? You know whose vote I'm going to cancel out? The person who tailgated me the other day and screamed out the window, cry liberal tears. That person.
Oh, God. Yeah. Cancel the fuck out of that vote.
Yeah. Canceled. What about you?
I'm personally canceling out Rick Caruso's vote.
Oh, that feels good.
Yeah, that's my personal mission. That's who I'm going to picture when I go vote. I'm canceling out Rick Caruso specifically by voting for Karen Bass for mayor of LA. This week, we're joined by Amanda Nguyen and Megan Gailey to tackle the following questions. What's next for affirmative action? Can we ever forgive the COVIDiots? Why do the people who say they love the flag the most seem to have the least idea how to treat the flag? All this and more right now. All right, Alyssa, let's get to the most important story in the news. I have been awake since about 2 a.m.
Some bullshit right there.
It sucks. I'm really running on fumes right now. I cannot wait until we're done doing this so I can take a nap.
Let me be your feet.
Are you, it was then that I carried you-ing me?
Yeah, totally. Come on.
You're like the one set of footprints on the, but I recognize that they're your footprints because they are clogs. Like there is one set of clog footprints on the beach.
Little Barney rubble feet just right beside you.
Well, I'm very lucky to have you at my side per usual, but especially today because I'm not doing great, but let's start the real news with some encouraging sound.
And so what I'm worried about is that the rule that you're advocating, that in the context of a holistic review process, a university can take into account and value all of the other background and personal characteristics of other applicants, but they can't value race. What I'm worried about is that that seems to me to have the potential of causing more of an equal protection problem than it's actually solving. And the reason why I get to that possible conclusion is thinking about two applicants who would like to have their family backgrounds credited in this applications process, and I'm hoping to get your reaction to this hypothetical. The first applicant says, I'm from North Carolina. My family has been in this area for generations since before the Civil War, and I would like you to know that I will be the fifth generation to graduate from the University of North Carolina. I now have that opportunity to do that, and given my family background, it's important to me that I get to attend this university. I want to honor my family's legacy by going to this school. The second applicant says, I'm from North Carolina. My family's been in this area for generations since before the Civil War, but they were slaves and never had a chance to attend this venerable institution. As an African American, I now have that opportunity, and given my family background, it's important to me to attend this university. I want to honor my family legacy by going to this school. Now, as I understand your no race conscious admissions rule, these two applicants would have a dramatically different opportunity to tell their family stories and to have them count. The first applicant would be able to have his family background considered and valued by the institution as a part of its consideration of whether or not to admit him, while the second one wouldn't be able to because his story is in many ways bound up with his race and with the race of his ancestors. So I want to know, based on how your rule would likely play out in scenarios like that, why excluding consideration of race in a situation in which the person is not saying that his race is something that has impacted him in a negative way. He just wants to have it honored, just like the other person has their personal background family story honored. Why is telling him no not an equal protection violation?
You just heard Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson asking some questions, talking during a case before the Supreme Court that could make affirmative action in college admissions illegal. So on one hand, it's great to have you on the court, Justice Jackson. Love listening to her. She's great. But on the other, this is not a great
yikes
moment in American history. And she does raise an interesting point. You know what? I think people who are descended from slave owners just straight up shouldn't be allowed to go to college.
I mean, well, they shouldn't be able to use it as bragging rights. That's for damn sure.
Nope, no college. I'm going to take the extreme position.
You're a hardliner, Aaron. You're a hardliner.
If your great-great-great-great-great-grandparents were like plantation owners, like Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Django Unchained, your descendants are not allowed to go to college.
That's fine. You know, fine. Doesn't affect me.
No. Doesn't affect me either. I think we were more, what's the line from 30 Rock that Jack uses to just like, we were more like, you know, cleaning farming people. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to what this case is about to do. I'm sure on Strict Scrutiny, they're talking about this in depth.
Yes.
So if you want some really smart legal analysis by some really smart legal brains, definitely check out Strict Scrutiny. But we're going to give you a quick rundown on what the case is about and what's probably going to happen. So on October 31st, there were about 5 hours of oral argument. What? Okay, real quick.
Talk.
So many hours of oral argument, right? What's going to happen when we start getting millennial Supreme Court justices who like have to go 5 hours without looking at their phones? Like, are they going to have to?
I don't know. They're going to need phone breaks.
Maybe they're going to be able to Twitch stream each of their like.
You're using words I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well. This is the generational divide. So 5 hours of oral argument on Halloween. There were challenges to Harvard University and the University of North Carolina's policy to consider race as a factor in their respective admission processes. As this ruling will probably come down next spring, you know, right now it looks like there is a comfortable majority to overturn 44 years of precedent and make it so that race can no longer be considered a factor in college admissions.
Whew.
What do you make of this, Alyssa?
Well, you know, Aaron, you know, it's funny. One, I listened to as much of the oral arguments as I could. If you look back to 1978, when the first case was decided, I mean, affirmative action has been upheld every time by one vote. So it's not shocking that we're in this place now. I think what is shocking, and I think it was Justice Kagan who first made the point, but then Sonia Sotomayor and Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson also piled on, that for a court full of conservative originalists, they're kind of completely ignoring the 14th Amendment and like how this would impact equal protection. And I think it was Dahlia Lithwick who had written that basically if you take the sum total of the framing of the conservative justices, it basically could be described as like looking at Brown versus Board of Education and saying that it was correctly decided, not because it gave protections to Black children to obtain a good education, an equal education, but because it freed both Black and white children from racial classifications. Like, I don't know what they are. I just think it's fucking hypocritical. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking hypocritical. You are an originalist when you want to be, and you are a petty bitch, as Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch, some of their quotes, Aaron, blew my mind.
Oh, can I read you one of Thomas's real quick?
Please. I have a couple. And you, I see we have Sep. I knew that we would both hone in on the very pettiness that is afforded to us. So please go ahead with Thomas.
First of all, the geniuses who designed our country just decided that putting a herd of dorky turtles in charge of the legal system and having no checks for them was a great call. I'm starting to think that a bunch of, you know, 18 to 30-year-old tax dodgers might not have designed the most foolproof system of government. Like, it had a good run.
Sounds about right.
It had a good run, but we're kind of, like, getting to the point in the Monopoly game when one person owns, like, all of the fancy properties and everyone is like, can we stop fucking playing this game? And the only person who likes to play it.
Yeah, keep Park Place. Let me get back to my life.
It's like, I'm tired of playing Monopoly. And then you're like, that's the moment when you realize your friend that owns all the property but is like, no, keep playing, is a sociopath. And you're like, oh. Okay, so back to what Justice Tom. I told you I was loopy today, Alyssa.
Yeah, but we're doing it. We're doing it. We're getting it done.
Sure. His first question for UNC's lawyer, Ryan Park, was, I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means. It seems to mean everything for everyone.
What?
That's like a Ron Burgundy style quote.
Well, you know what? Not even Ron Burgundy would go on to say that Jim Crow and affirmative action are somewhat indistinguishable.
Okay, it's extremely rich coming from the person who was appointed after a search for a black conservative justice after Thurgood Marshall left the court.
Yeah.
Like, he was picked by the original George Bush.
Yep.
Specifically because he was the black Republican. He was, like, woefully underqualified. He honestly, look.
Is he the Herschel Walker of the Supreme Court?
He's the Herschel Walker of the Supreme Court. Justice Clarence Thomas, I think that he thinks affirmative action is bad because he realizes deep down that he is the worst Supreme Court justice.
Ever.
And the reason that he has his job is because conservatives wanted somebody like him to do their bidding.
Yeah.
And it's gross, to be frank. Amy Coney Barrett, same thing, was picked for the Supreme Court because she's a woman. After Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, I think that that the former president thought that it would be a great way to own the libs.
Oh, totally.
By appointing Ruth Bader Ginsburg's ideological female opposite to replace her. But yeah, I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about some good quotes because I wanted to get into, like, our girl Kagan.
Oh, no. The only other one I heard that I really just felt a need to flag here was Justice Alito.
Who wouldn't? He's Italian. Like, the original framers of the Constitution would be like, Italian?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Catholic.
Shut up, Alito. But apparently, he threw some bomb where he said that, you know, we have to protect against things like Elizabeth Warren using quote unquote family lore to say that she is of Native American heritage. Like, you're a Supreme Court justice. You're trying to maintain that the court is somewhat legitimate. And you fucking throw a bomb at EW, like, you're so petty, bitch. Petty, bitch.
What a weird, like, how do you have time to watch Fox News, sir? You have, like, are you a shit poster? Like,
what is that?
I want to know what Alito's online activity is like, because I wouldn't be, yeah, he probably has a 4chan account. Anyway, Justice Kagan brought something up during the oral arguments that I thought was really interesting. And she pointed out that right now, statistically, girls, when they graduate from high school, are much more qualified for college than boys. And the gap is growing. Nothing is being done to make our education system better serve boys. Nothing. And so as that gap grows, actually, women who were the beneficiaries, specifically white women, who were historically the major beneficiaries of affirmative action, will continue to run away with the game because boys are not as qualified for college as a population as girls. And so schools are going to have, like, super lopsided gender balances.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, I mean, honestly, I don't know why that's, college isn't for everybody. And I think that trying to pretend like it is, isn't great. But I also think that, like, the environment of school suffers the more homogenized the population is.
Yeah, totally.
Although I can say if colleges kind of like became de facto all women's institutions, I think they would probably be better.
Well, you know that we'd have all men's schools. They'd be like, we need our own place.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Can't have all you women around all the time. All men's schools.
The world is already a man cave. So, like, whatever.
It's a giant man cave.
But, you know, another thing that I wanted to bring up is that the audacity of white conservative men to believe that if only affirmative action were eliminated, they would be the ones to come on top.
Totally.
I think they believe deep down inside that they have been robbed of things because somebody who is a non-white, non-man was given it. You know, that there are men
yes.
that if everything else is equal and all we consider are just like the raw qualifications, the people that will come up on top are the people that'll look that look just like them.
It's, you know, Aaron, it's like I would just love to be a fly on the wall when Brett Kavanaugh's talking to Squee, being like, I got fucking screwed in this world.
What? I mean, I'm curious if very many conservatives understand, first of all, white people are not the best students. They're not at all. There are colleges in California where the balance is like Asian American students are just like kicking everybody's ass. And as a result, schools in California have tried to figure out ways to encourage other ethnic groups to go to their schools to increase the diversity. I think the fact that these conservatives believe that what will happen is now things will go back to how they looked in like the 1950s is just, it's foolish. Also, like, let's get rid of legacy admissions forever.
Yeah, fine.
At every school. And also, because like, I don't know, who would you rather go to college with? A student who grew up in a disadvantaged district from a background that is not white, who maybe didn't have access to all of the resources to do test prep or to have somebody on them from eighth grade being like, we got to get you ready to apply to Yale, get you ready to apply to Yale, but nevertheless worked really hard, did the best they could given their circumstances, and have all of the makings of somebody who in every environment that they are in, they will figure out a way to not only survive but excel. Would you rather go to college with that person or Jared Kushner?
Oh, please.
Like, the problem is, this is another, whatever, I'm like going off the rails here, but this is another issue that I think conservatives have successfully made into one of white people versus everyone else, when really everybody else should just be mad at rich people. Like, we could be uniting and being like, wait a minute, get rid of legacy admissions.
Yeah.
Instead of like getting mad at like the low-income person who learned English as a second language, who had slightly lower grades but got into your dream school when you didn't.
That's exactly right.
Anyway, okay. All right, let's talk a little bit. Oh, God, this Pelosi attack.
Fucking terrible.
It was. So where are you with this right now?
In what way?
Have you been following the story? Have you been able to, like, keep up on?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, believe me. Well, because one, like, of course, following the story. Two, Caroline, our producer, brought this up, and it has rocked me ever since. Why is everyone going live from outside of their house? Do we need to broadcast more where they live? I mean, it just seems, like,
yeah.
utterly unnecessary. But it really did, like, I think the story was just so crazy when you first heard about it. You're like, wait a minute. How is this possible? Doesn't she have Capitol Police at her house? Like, no. No.
Well, not in San Francisco.
No, not in San Francisco. But it is just an incredible... The whole thing is tragic, but also just this crazy, almost unbelievable story from Paul Pelosi, like, going into the bathroom where his phone was plugged in to call 911 and leave it. Let me tell you something. It is a real just eyeballs at young people who are like old people. Bleh. I don't know that I would have had the presence of mind to go and fucking put 911 on speakerphone and be like, come find me, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that is the most, this is a terrible, fucking violent, brutal attack. And mm-hmm. I think the thing that is the absolute most disgusting, and Aaron, to confirm my beliefs, last night I watched that OAN network because I was
Why
like—
Why did you do that?
Because I wanted to see what they were saying. And you know what? In no world, I could not imagine somebody hurting Mitch McConnell's family and any Democrat getting on TV being like, well, you know, like, and making jokes about it. Like, Carrie Lake is a repugnant human being, but like also kind of a scared little bitch, because when she stood on stage and made jokes about the Pelosi's not having good enough security, or when Glenn Youngkin is like, oh yeah, let's send Nancy back to be with Paul in California, and he meant it in a very not nice way, I just think that they should at least own what they said. Because then when Carrie Lake was called on it, she's like, I didn't say that. It was taken out of context. Own your fucking shittiness, you bitch. Like, just own your shittiness. That it is what you said. Tons of people played the whole quote. But in general, I think it's like pretty scary. And I think that if you're someone who is open about your political beliefs and you're not part of the MAGA community, I think it's just a kind of a reminder that there's like danger around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny. There's not a lot of, I think people like Ted Cruz were sharing misinformation, disinformation about the nature of the attack before we even knew anything. And these are the same people who were beyond pissed that people were standing on a public sidewalk outside of Justice Kavanaugh's house after Dobbs came down. And it's, I mean, like being like, you guys are hypocrites. It doesn't matter because nobody's going to punish them for it.
Right.
But I think it's important for us to just clock the hypocrisy just so that we can, like, we're not going nuts, are we? Like,
no.
You caught that. I caught that. These people are complete craven hypocrites and they make no sense and they have no plan. And yeah.
That's kind of the through line for news today. Conservative hypocrisy.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, nobody who wants to vote for them really cares. And the people who don't want to vote for them are so turned off by the just constant threat level orange of the news cycle that I think that they tune things out when really it's like, dude, like the frog is almost boiled here, you know? Yeah. And it's upsetting. I actually deleted Twitter from my phone. I mean, I've gone back and forth with it, but like, this weekend, you know, when the sale was closed with Mr. Musk, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try not having it on my phone and see if my life is better. It's been great.
That is awesome. I try to not open it because I should just delete it from my phone, because I don't have it on my computer. I don't have any social media on my computer because I'm like, when I'm on my computer, I should really do work.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
But I mean, an Elon Musk retweeting 112 million followers he has, retweeting some fucking bullshit, fake news, false story.
Yeah.
So glad he's the head of the public town square.
Yeah. My thoughts on this are like, he's really tanking it more quickly than anybody thought. But the other side of that is, I think that Twitter in some cases, I mean, when I was like working in a newsroom, it was a really helpful way to just kind of like take the temperature when news was breaking, especially there are some really, really good, reliable people on Twitter at just like disseminating information and catching up on what's going on. But I also think that it has bred a sort of complacency in newsrooms, not individual reporters, in newsrooms themselves, and not my newsroom, but I've just noticed it.
Obviously.
Where people... people are less likely to go out into the world and touch grass and like talk to real people and like do the type of old fashioned reporting. And that's because it takes a lot of time and resources to do that. And I think Twitter really contributed to the take machine. Mm-hmm. And to see the take machine's engine shut down would actually probably be better for news and commentary in the long run. But we do need some kind of social media where it's possible for people who are verified individuals are able to communicate with the public. I think, and Facebook is kind of over. Instagram is like the algorithm makes it all weird. So whatever that app is might be TBD. It's not Be Real, I'll tell you that.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, well, I'll tell you more about after this recording.
Thanks so much.
Okay, we have 1 week left before the midterms.
Yes. Have you voted?
No, Josh and I are going to fill out our ballots together. We're going to, and also I wanted to let everyone know that if you have the possibility of, like, California is really, it's really easy to vote. they send you a ballot and, you know, and there's a million places to get like ballot guides. Vote Save America's ballot guide is really, really good if you live in a place that doesn't have as many resources available to you. Yeah, so we're going to fill out our ballots together. We're going to drop them off together. And I'm really looking forward to voting for Karen Bass for mayor of LA. It is closer than it should be.
It is ever, Erin, and this is the thing. All the polls, I just think they're all lies right now. You can't, it's like, whatever. We just have to consider everything close and everyone has to go vote. I mean, I live in New York and the panic over how close the polls are between Kathy Hochul and malevolent twerp Lee Zeldin.
He is a malevolent twerp.
He's a malevolent twerp. He's like, I look at him and I was like, you literally cannot be the governor of New York. You're like, I mean, I'm not saying Cuomo is the standard bearer here, but like, let's New York tough it up a little bit, you twerp.
Yeah.
But it is real here in New York and the polls, it's not feeling overwhelmingly blue wave up here. So everybody needs to go vote.
Mm-hmm. Again, like polling is so unreliable. And I hate that conversations are so reliant on polling, but also, you know, like how else is this information is unknowable information,
right?
The only thing you can know yourself is, did you vote? Did you text? You know what? If you have your phone right now and you're not driving and it's possible for you, take your phone out and send a message to your group chat, your favorite group chat. Hey, has everyone voted? Does everyone have their ballot? Has everyone voted? What's your plan to vote?
And if you go in person, thank your poll workers. It's tough out there. And I mean, I went in to vote in early in person on Sunday. And smiles, helpfulness, you know, it's just, God bless.
Yeah, their poll workers are the greatest. I also wanted to single out two special states. Wisconsin, you guys.
Come on. Listen. Let's go.
You have a chance to kick out the dumbest bitch in the Senate. Ron Johnson is the dumbest bitch in the Senate, and he represents you right now. How embarrassing for you.
So embarrassing.
Get him out of there. Get him out of there. Mandela Barnes would be so much better in every way.
Incredible.
Than Ron Johnson. Second, Arizona.
Oh.
Guys.
Literally. Come on.
Guys. Guys, I know you have it in you. I know you have it in you. You elected Mark Kelly. I know you have it in you. Your state went for Biden. I know you've got it. You just, you have to vote for Katie Hobbs.
In the words of Elizabeth Warren, let's fucking go.
Yeah.
let's go
also,
vote.
Like, God, you guys, like, Carrie Lake would be a step. What was that, like, radiologist who appeared to be herself radiated, who was the governor of Arizona for a while?
I have no idea.
You know, she was like the one that pointed at Barack Obama. She was like
she was a bit craggly. What was her name?
Yeah, the radiated radiologist. I don't know, but she, like, Carrie Lake is as bad, if not worse, than she is.
Jan Brewer.
Oh, yeah.
Jan Brewer.
Jan Brewer. Jan the ma'am. Okay, so, yes, if you haven't voted, vote as soon as you can. Tell all your friends you got to vote. We have a week left, or less than a week left, of voting. We're probably not going to know everything that happened for a couple weeks. I hate election night.
It's so, we'll spend it just texting each other.
We'll spend it texting each, maybe a little bit in the group chat, both of us occasionally.
Maybe.
Like poking into the Crooked Media live stream and being like, you guys, this is a bad way to construct a narrative about the results of an election when Democrats are more likely to vote early. So, yeah, nobody knows what's going to happen. I'm nervous about it. Everyone should be nervous about it. And then, you know, hopefully we can take a short break in nervousness after more of the returns come in. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, can we ever forgive people for the way they acted during COVID? And should we?
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And welcome back. I'm here with Alyssa and joined by two more people on today's Hysteria Personal Political Panel. I'm just going to bring them right in rather than doing some banter. I'm just going to bring them both right in. First off, her podcast, I Love a Lifetime Movie, she hosts with Naomi Ekperigin, heard of her, is gearing up for the holiday movie season. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, my God. So you're definitely going to want to tune in. Megan Gailey, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you. We actually reviewed our first holiday movie on Halloween. I was like, it was soon, but now we're ready. All I Want for Christmas has already blared in my household by my husband.
Oh, really? Is he a Mariah stan or just for that
Christmas song? Mariah, I mean, is showing me yard inflatables. Which ones are we going to have? The penguin on top of the Santa.
I love the penguin on the Santa.
I know. Well, because he bought a terrifying Scream Man for Halloween, and I did ask to have some input on the holiday decorations.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. You know, even before Halloween, in like the week and a half before Halloween, when I went into like a store, it was like they were just chomping at
itching.
The bit to get to
Christmas. Oh, yeah.
But they knew they can't do it because Halloween is like the last firewall and the people will not have it. But they were like ready to go.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, no, I have a strict no Christmas before Halloween.
You said false start.
Yeah, absolutely. And rounding out the panel, next, you might have seen her unanimously pass a sexual assault survivor's resolution at the United Nations last month. Wow, that's kind of a big deal. She's advocated for by her nonprofit, Rise. She's also casually a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Amanda Nguyen, welcome to Hysteria.
Hello. You look so good for having 2 hours of sleep.
Oh, that's so nice of you to say. I have this IKEA lamp that I use as a ring light.
Thank you. I shine it down.
Mm-hmm. I shine it down on the silver of my, this is so like MacGyver-y. I shine it down and it reflects back and it makes me look
nice.
Like I have blood flowing in my face.
So
That's good.
Thank you so much.
Amanda, you're the newest member of the Hysteria team. So I want to start with you. You also weren't with us during like the height of the COVID pandemic. So I don't really know how you were handling things, but how did you handle the last like few years of COVID? How careful were you? How many of the rules did you follow?
Yeah. So first of all, when it started happening, I'm an introvert. So it was great. You know, I was inside. I did not want to hang out with anyone. And actually, even when things were getting better, I kept being like, oh, you know, well, like maybe not. Because I'm really, you know, COVID. Right now it's a little harder because people are out. But yeah, in the beginning, I really loved it. I actually wore gloves. I bought things to like push doors with. I was, you know, all the way there. Researched like the masks. Do you remember when like the masks were even hard to get? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Like I would make my own masks, you know, it was a whole thing. But yeah, the world's changed a lot. And now I feel like, obviously, I can't use that reasoning anymore. Now I just tell people, like, I don't want to hang out with you.
But, how did you view people around you who were, like, not following the rules? Were you one of those people who was just, like, horrified by a public sneeze?
Well, yes. So my dad got cancer over COVID.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was to go through chemo, you know, he lives in California, so we really understood what being high risk is. And it was really disheartening to see that some people just really didn't understand the concept of, hey, like, looking out for your community members. And it was also like a really fascinating contrast between, so I'm Vietnamese American, and the concept of, like, Eastern community, like, caring versus, like, individualistic Western, community. So yes, I did have feelings about it, but, you know, I did not tweet about it. I'll just say that.
Yeah. So the reason I wanted to talk about this is because there was this really fascinating piece in The Atlantic written by Emily Oster. Megan, I'm sure you've heard of Emily Oster.
Oh, yeah. She's our guiding light.
Our guiding light, who still sometimes has some controversial opinions. She's an economist at Brown University. She wrote a book called Expecting Better, and she uses data to analyze and, I guess, give us her assessment of risk when it comes to, like, public health issues, specifically parenting, pregnancy, childbirth type things. So Expecting Better really helped me relax when I was pregnant. I know a lot of doctors don't love that book because it causes people maybe to relax too much. But during the pandemic, she was very critical. She wasn't like Naomi Wolf critical. She wasn't like off the rails about it, but she was very critical of pandemic restrictions that had to do with, like, children and masking and you know, playgrounds and stuff like that. And now she has this piece in The Atlantic called Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty. And I saw the conversation around this piece online that was sort of like, yeah, F you, Emily Oster, because she was kind of, she was one of those people that was like, let your kids play together on the playground when, the kind of prevailing attitude among the people that were kind of more plugged into what was going on with the pandemic, was people were very scared and people were trying to be maybe overcautious rather than undercautious. So I don't want to pass judgment on, you know, we could talk about Emily Oster for hours, but I just wanted to give you guys that background so that you kind of understood that there's a little bit of, like, built up anger around people who expressed a preference for a more lackadaisical approach to infection control when it came to kids. But at the same time, the piece is really interesting because it talks about how when the pandemic started, none of us knew what was going on. People just were trying to make the best decisions with the information that they had. And as a result, the people that managed their conduct during pandemic in a way that was over or under cautious, given what we know now, we should just be like, you know what, Mulligan, let's move on. But I don't really see that happening. Megan, I wonder what your thoughts are. Is a pandemic amnesty possible?
I think if it pertains just to that, but the people that I saw being super lax or doing even just the hoarding of toilet paper at the beginning ended up being people that I was like, oh, you're a shitty person. Mm-hmm. So it's like that trickles into the other ways that they operate in life. So if you were very staunchly against the vaccine, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm probably not going to agree with some other opinions you have that don't pertain to public health. And literally, you can DM me. I do not care. So it was just this thing of like, yes, if it was someone and that's just the one thing, I think it also kind of pertains to people that were so intense about it. Mm-hmm. I still see people in the grocery store in gloves. I know that they're washing their groceries, even though we have all the science that we do not need to be wiping down our groceries. We are now 3 years in, and you don't need to scrub the goldfish box. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you probably end up being a bit of a control freak and maybe have fear that comes out of you that's not rational in other aspects of your life as well. So I agree with you, Erin. It's not going to be as easy as cut and dry. Like, listen, we all were doing our best. We didn't know what was going on. But it's like, if you tend to not believe doctors, I bet you don't believe a lot of other things that I tend to believe.
Mm-hmm. Alyssa, did you have anybody that your relationship with them or your opinion of them was damaged by the way they acted during the height of the COVID pandemic? I don't want to pretend like it's over because it's still ongoing.
No, well, I mean, they're all different kinds of people, right? There are the people who posted weird fucking shit on Instagram, like, guess we're going to ride it out in St. Bart's. Fuck you. I mean, that was a real Instagram post.
Oh,
I was
no.
like, this is not 2 weeks worth of, I mean, I guess they, whatever. They didn't ride it out in St. Bart's, for what it's worth. They didn't.
Also, St. Bart's doesn't want you. St. Bart's did not want you.
They didn't want any of us. And then there are the people who, you know, I think that for me, the biggest issue is seeing people who were like, whatever, this is fake. I'm not going to wear my mask, blah, blah, blah. To me, that is just an utter lack of empathy. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that there was something in her article that I felt really overlooked, the feelings that we might have about people. You know, I have friends that still very, very religiously wear masks because, you know what, if they don't, if it's like, if a certain number of people in their shop get COVID, the shop has to close. And then guess what? They lose money. They might go out of business. It's like, I just think that we really underestimate caregivers, frontline workers who had no choice but to go to work. And mm-hmm. I think that it was just incredibly disrespectful in the beginning. And those people, if you can't look at people who are marching into hospitals to work, to help you, to protect you, to heal you, and think that you can't put a fucking mask on for them, I mean, I will never change my opinion of you during that period. Like, that's mm-hmm. just, that's a no. You know, mm-hmm. that's not about like the medical look. Especially because, like, let's be honest. Now, putting aside the schools being closed and kids, that's a totally different argument. But, like, right. if we're talking about the world asked you to put a mask on and you couldn't do it, mm-hmm. what?
You're a yeah. baby. You're a loser. You're a baby.
You're a baby. Yeah. And you can't look and see that all of these people, you know, the grocery workers, you have to be free. You have to have your freedom to go in and cough on them when we're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, no, Jesus fuck, put a mask yeah. on.
Why do you want everyone to look at your mouth anyway? Like, cover up your gross mouths are gross.
Some of the ugliest people.
None of us suffered by not seeing everybody's mouth.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
you would
totally.
You would see the people that didn't want to put a mask on, and you go, this is your time to shine. Your face is calling out for a mask.
Amanda, I wonder if you had your opinion of people, of anybody that you know, change. Like, did you have friendships get damaged by the way that people acted during COVID, especially given the fact that you're dad was immunocompromised during that time?
Yeah, well, something that definitely changed was that I will never believe another zombie apocalypse movie, because if there is a vaccine in that movie, I now question whether or not people will take that vaccine. I now question whether or not people would actually debate whether or not that zombie is really a zombie, right? So yes, yeah, sci-fi changed for me forever. Yeah, there was a really scary moment for me. So my dad had recovered, you know, went through all of his chemo sessions, and then it was his birthday, and he decided to go to a restaurant to celebrate, and he got COVID. Oh. And he is the highest risk. And not only did he get COVID, my mom got COVID and her sister got COVID. So, like, there was a month where I thought I was going to lose my entire family. Mm. And during that month, when people were saying, oh, well, you know, this is not a big deal, I felt and lived that reality. And there are people who, you know, lost their members, family members and close ones to it. But it really did change for me at that moment, because one, we know the sign. What was really upsetting to me was how people didn't seem to accept science. Mm-hmm. And have you seen the movie Don't Look Up?
Mm-hmm. No, I started watching it and I was like, too real. So I stopped.
Yeah, well, it applies to, I mean, that's about, you know, an asteroid, but it could be applicable to mm-hmm. any kind of like insert science here, right? So yeah, there were people where I was like, you know what, I can't be friends with you anymore, because if I meet with you and then I'm going to be around like my family, you know, it would literally put my dad's life at risk.
Mm-hmm. Are you like, you know, Alyssa mentioned and Megan mentioned that there's like a through line between the way that people behaved during the height of the epidemic and like bad personality traits. Would you hang out with those people now? Like, are you willing to forgive them? Or do you think that it's like, do you think that they're just kind of like, they just showed their ass and so your friendship with them is over?
Yeah. I feel like one of the greatest things I have found about growing up is that I don't need new friends. And so
no new friends for me. That's a Megan Gailey quote right there. That is fully Megan Gailey quote.
And yeah, I just, if you are going to risk my health and my parents' health, like literally their lives, then no. And if you knew that risk before and you're still doing that, then no. Yeah, that's not to say that I understand why people are evolving, especially as, again, our science is getting better. We do have vaccines, et cetera. And this is not only about the pandemic, but just cancel mm-hmm. culture in general. One of my friends said this quote to me, and it really stuck to me. She said, "We are a country that demands a lot of apologies, but doesn't know how to accept them." And, you know, I think that if somebody were to come back and say like, "Hey, you know, after a lot of reflection, I realized that it hurt you and that I was wrong and, you know, et cetera," then like maybe, you know, mm-hmm. but for those who just didn't have that, no new friends, mm-hmm. no old friends too.
I think that's totally fair. I'm thinking back now to like the very beginning of the pandemic. And when I was like awake last night, sleeplessly, I was kind of reflecting back on those weird first couple months and how surreal and bizarre it was. And I was thinking about how I used to live really close to this big park, and there were playgrounds in the park, and they put like caution tape around the playgrounds at the beginning, and they wouldn't let people go on hiking trails at the beginning. And like, and it almost seemed like the city was just determined to trap people in their homes, even though we didn't really, even after we had pretty compelling evidence that it didn't really spread that easily outside, especially if people were like masked. And I'm still like a little bit, I think that some of the overcaution in some places led to worse mental health outcomes for people, mm-hmm. especially at the beginning. Megan, you and I were in the same city when this happened. I wonder how you remember that time. And do you still have like a bad taste in your mouth about it, or have you moved on?
I think I was luckily in a situation where I was reminding myself this constantly of like, I'm in a safe environment. I am with someone I love. I have enough supplies. All the hierarchy of needs were met for me. But the reason I was having to remind myself that is because I was like, I'm losing my fucking mind. So I can't imagine how much people were losing their mind if they had children, if they had immediate people they needed to be caregiving, if they were in domestic violence situations that they felt trapped in. And I think as time goes on, we will really hopefully realize all of those negative impacts that were had on people. When you talk about depression, I remember there was a moment during the pandemic where I was like, well, I'm taking a lot of edibles. And it was like, I'm not taking, because it was that thing of like, every day is a snow day. And so I think a lot of people were self-medicating, and we've talked about the unhealthiness and the bread and all of the outlets that we were using to just try and get through. And we don't know the long-term effects of what it was to just be in our homes, not around people for 2+ years yet. Like, our trauma is not even begun to heal because in a lot of ways we're still in it. And there were relationships that changed, not even just based on COVID, but based on like, hey, I wasn't the best version of myself during these 2 years, willing to admit that. I think you probably fall into that too. Like, can we call a mulligan on just like these 2 years and go, I'm on a journey to be better and move forwards with that. And some people can't do that. And so I would add on to Amanda's friend's quotes of like, I don't think we're a country that's very good at apologizing. We really have an insistence to dig our heels in and go, nope, I was right, even when all of the evidence proves that we were wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alyssa, I wonder if, you know, evidence proving people wrong, I guess, kind of goes not both ways. I would say it goes 90% the way of people who were not cautious enough and 10% of like kind of roping off playgrounds and like closing schools too zealously. I like Megan, I'm so glad that I didn't have a kid in school during mm-hmm. the height of the pandemic. It just seems nuts. But do you think that local politicians, city politicians, state politicians made decisions so that it would look like they were either doing something or standing up to the liberals? Like, did you see that locally?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's so interesting because in the beginning of the pandemic, I didn't. Right. I mean, I was in New York. Elmhurst, Queens was ground zero for what was happening in the beginning. I mean, like, we forget that there were hospitals utterly overflowing. In New York State, there were wars between counties because they were taking ventilators from all the counties and sending them back down to New York City. And so I think that in the beginning, it was, I think, pretty genuine. I think everybody was just leading with the best thing they possibly knew. I mean, like, I remember March 13th so clearly because it was the day that both Cuomo and de Blasio gave different guidance. And my husband and I were like, we got to get the fuck out of here. This is not a good, having done crisis management at the White House, I was like, this is a bad sign. But, you know, fast forward a couple of months, I think that in the beginning, everybody who didn't live in New York or California or the heavily affected states were like, it'll just stay in the high population areas. We're going to be fine. Leave us the fuck alone. This is what you get for living in a big city. And as it crept forward, you know, I think that if we had had a president who took it seriously, as we all knew he didn't, and now we know he didn't.
Even when
he was like, I wish you all could have monoclonal antibodies. But I think, you know, if they had just shut the country down in the beginning, we might have had better luck, and had everybody take the same amount of pain. But no, I think as COVID went on, there were communities that were like, look at us, we're super cautious. And then there were others that were like, cry your liberal tears, we're not wearing masks anymore. When neither of those things are based on science. And also the fact that people couldn't deal with the fact that science changed, you know, that the COVID we started out with in the beginning is not sort of what we are dealing with now. And we didn't have vaccines. I mean, like we're still getting COVID, but the whole point of the vaccines, which is something I cannot listen to, when people are like, science is fake. I got my vaccine and I got COVID. Yeah. And I'm never getting another vaccine ever for anything. And it's like, you dumbass, you might have died from COVID and you didn't. You got a cold. That doesn't mean that COVID is a cold. It means you got vaccinated and you got a cold instead of like being hospitalized and intubated.
Yeah. You know, something that I've seen as like a lingering effect of the pandemic is the last time I was at an Airbnb. I was at an Airbnb recently and there are all of these things that are like, due to COVID, we're doing enhanced, like, you know, cleaning. And it's like, you're just using this as an excuse.
You should clean anyway.
Yeah, you're doing this as an excuse to like charge me more. Yes. And I don't need every surface bleached. And we know that you don't need every surface bleached. In hotels now, they're like, due to COVID, we're not washing the towels every day. It's like, no, you don't want to pay enough people.
And
to
it's do better the for
work.
The environment.
Yeah. I mean, but also like there are ways to install like a gray water recycling system that you could use for irrigation of the grounds. Like it's really not about the environment. Like it's
no, they don't want to pay someone to wash. They don't want to pay someone to bring room service up. They don't want to pay someone to cook room service. And it's like, okay, I didn't know Marriott was so hard up for cash.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like there's some lingering, I'm seeing some like lingering bullshit that I'm like, that is not based on
correct.
Anything.
But yeah. We're a bullshit country. That's like, you know, whenever I watch a pyramid scheme documentary, which are my favorite, I go, oh, we're a pyramid scheme. And so if you're at the bottom of the pyramid scheme, your towels aren't getting washed.
Mm-hmm. Wait, can you outline that for us? I'm very curious. Can you map up on America? So this
is- yeah, I'd be happy to.
Get Megan a whiteboard.
Yes.
Somebody call Katie Porter and see if she has any extras. Let's get Megan Bailey a whiteboard ASAP. Megan, how cautious are you now? Like, I mean, we see in the news all the time, like, oh, we're still in a pandemic. And then
yeah.
And you go outside and it's really, nobody's acting really like we are.
Yeah. So I was pregnant at the tail end of it, or, you know, if the tail end is going to be the longest tail in the history of tails. And so I was pregnant in 2021 and then gave birth in 2022. And my biggest fear was having COVID while I needed to be delivering, because then it was like, you will have to deliver alone. And it just sounded like so terrifying. And so I would say like I definitely didn't want to get COVID when I was pregnant. And so I was cautious then, but I was again living in Los Angeles where the community at large was sort of doing the quote unquote right thing still. And so I was able to make it through and did not have to deliver alone. And then I got COVID. My husband got COVID and our baby got COVID when he was 2 months old, and he had symptoms and I had to take him in and he had to have his nose swabbed. And we got it from like someone who was coming to visit him that tested and tested negative. And then once they got there, so it was one of those things of like, there's no one to blame. There's no one to be mad at. This wasn't great. But then once my 2-month-old had it, I was like, well, to me, this is worst possible scenario. That I do think it's made me be like, yeah, I'll go to Vegas. Like, I'm like, the worst possible thing already happened to me that, and I mean that in terms of low level worst things. Like everyone ended up being totally fine. It was a brutal 6 to 10 days because we could have no help and our baby was sick and we were sick. And so worst possible, I mean, in terms of Megan being dramatic. Don't DM me about that. And so now I do think I'm probably the most lax I've been over the period of it. But I was at something over the weekend where a bunch of people ended up having symptoms and coming down with it. And I was supposed to go visit a friend's baby yesterday. And so I tested and was negative. I tested this morning and was negative, but I did tell my friend, hey, I have been exposed. And we both decided it's best to just not come see the baby. And so it does still have a presence in my life. And I do have COVID tests at my house. My husband needs to go get tested because he has to be on set for something. Like it feels more of a constant and just sort of like, not even an annoyance, but just it is around. It is our cross to bear, and we need to be a level of cautious about it going forward, probably till the end of time.
Yay. Amanda, are you familiar with the subreddit Herman Cain Award?
No, what is that?
Oh my God. Okay. So I'm just going to give you the quick and dirty summary of it because I would love to hear your thoughts on its existence. So Herman Cain Award is a subreddit that takes screenshots of people's social media posts and it displays them as they progress from being people who are like, COVID's a hoax, blah, 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 to them dying of COVID. Because
Because
Herman Cain, as you can recall, was attended a Trump rally in Oklahoma that happened during the height of the we can just, you know, chaos magic our way out of COVID existing simply by continuing to have rallies. But he got COVID after being at a Trump rally and he died. And so the Herman Cain Award is this sort of dark corner of Reddit where for a while they have started like blurring out people's names and faces, but for a while they were not. So would get a sense of these people who are like, fuck this, I'm not going to get COVID. And then they died. So it was like very popular for a while. I wonder what you make of the existence of something like that. When you find out that someone who is like a COVID denier has come down with it, really, like, even in your like ugly corners, what do you think? Do you have any feeling like, what do you think was going to happen?
Well, thank you for describing it, because I did have emotions while you were describing what it is. First of all, facts are facts, right? So like the fact that this person publicly talked about it and then ended up dying from the thing that they were denying, that just exists. I would hope that people would learn from it. You know, that's like the positive side, but I'm sensing that it's popular because it's also maybe like a shaming thing, where people are using it to shame the other, you know, side or whatever. Look, like when it comes to how divisive people can be on this issue, I think that so much of it comes from attaching your identity to this idea, right? And so like once you are defensive, you can't have a conversation anymore. I think those images can be really powerful and be like, hey, like, look, there was something like you. If you approach it with empathy, then like, yeah. But if you're doing it to like shame someone and be like, look, like this person is like you, you're like them, you're going to die too. Like, I don't think that might be as helpful as it could be. But right. It's very effective. I mean, I'm going to go look this up. I'm glad they're blurring out the names though. And
yeah. For a while, they were not blurring out the names and people were... what's it called when you go when you join like an online mob brigadiering or whatever? They were going to the people's Facebook pages and like leaving mean comments and
oh god,
yeah. So it got really ugly. But I also think that the feelings that people had, I'm not defending it again.
Yeah,
I think I'm just trying to understand what would motivate somebody to post a mean thing on someone's Facebook page after they like died of a tragic viral disease. And I think that people who took all this energy and made sacrifices for what they thought was the greater good, seeing people just decide to sort of be, and I'm going to use this phrase ironically, like karmic welfare queens, essentially just like leeching off of the sacrifices of everyone else to live as normal a life as possible. Yeah. I think there's a real resentment that builds up there. And it just seems like it can play out ugly.
I just want to chime in too. I had a dad who was also sick and needed a life-saving surgery that he had to continue to have postponed because the hospital where he needed it was so overrun with people that were not vaccinated and had fallen very ill to COVID. And so I wish no one death. I want everyone, well, you know, that's, I'm giving you all a wink.
That's an asterisk.
I want everyone within reason to live and live well. But when your vitriol and denial and stupidity starts to impede on other people's health and well-being, you got God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alyssa, you're nodding. I would love to hear your thoughts.
No, I just agree. It's like, I mean, there are just so many, I think the thing for me that always that affected me the most was just seeing how many people were giving, literally putting their lives on the line for us.
Yeah.
And you see, I had a friend's mom who like hadn't been feeling well and she didn't want to go to the hospital because everyone's like, you know, shouldn't go to the hospital unless it's a real emergency. And she didn't think it was an emergency. And by the time she went to the hospital, she died 2 days later of stomach cancer. And so like those things are real, you know, that that people trying to do. It's like she tried to do the right thing. She's like, I don't think this is an emergency. And she didn't go. And so the people who were like, fuck this, you know, like, it's my life and I'm going to live it the way I want to, without understanding sort of like the bigger impact. I just, you know, I don't wish anything bad on anybody. But I think those people who didn't care about the health and well-being of their community members, I don't know. I really hope that they are visited by the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future for the rest of their lives.
Oh, just, I want them to be visited by all Christmas future, because that's the scary one. I wanted to highlight something from Emily Oster's article. She wrote, the people who got it right for whatever reason may want to gloat. Those who got it wrong for whatever reason may feel defensive and retrench into a position that doesn't accord with the facts. All of this gloating and defensiveness continues to gobble up a lot of social energy and to drive the culture wars, especially on the internet. Those discussions are heated, unpleasant, and ultimately unproductive. In the face of so much uncertainty, getting something right had a hefty amount of luck. And then she also wrote, moving on is crucial now because the pandemic created many problems that we still need to solve. And then she highlights student test scores, mental health, and you know, other things that we've touched on here. Do you think that moving on requires us to let go of that? Or do you think moving on should incorporate the feelings and the things we learned about each other during the pandemic? Do you think we need that information in order to move on in a way that's realistic? Alyssa?
Okay. So here's my question for everyone here. If you were very cautious during COVID, have you taken a moment to gloat? Like, mm-hmm. I think that the gloating is very overblown in her article. And I think if there's one person who could have taken a fucking lap, it's Dr. Fauci, and he certainly hasn't.
I mean, Ed Yong got a Pulitzer. So there you go.
I mean, this is like, I just don't think that, I think I have moved on. I think that it's my choice, in the same way that people who didn't want to take precautions during COVID was their choice. It's my choice to not be friends with people who I think have no empathy. And so I have moved on. But I just think that, like, saying that any of us who very proud, like, very, you know, dedicated in our mask wearing and social distancing have started gloating at any point, I haven't seen evidence of that. That's just my point.
Right.
Yeah. Amanda is like, I want to stay in my house for longer. What can I do?
Which is fine. So she's definitely not gloating.
No. Yeah. I feel like that was written with somebody in mind, but I do want to actually reference the culture wars part, because I feel like the industrial revolution of our century is digital. This was like even before, you know, the pandemic happened. But can you imagine going through a pandemic, being isolated without social media? What was that like, you know? And I've seen, I'll just speak for Stop Asian Hate, right? Absolutely, because people were home, because people were on social media, we were able to have these cultural moments that I don't know. Of course, they would have existed otherwise, but we're certainly fueled by the fact that people were online. Mm-hmm. And that helped. Mm-hmm. We communicated in a different way. So I know that she's probably talking about like the cultural wars of like mask or no mask or vaccine or no vaccine. But I think there were some different ways in which we learned to communicate that helped progress some of these movements.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really silver lining way to look at it.
Megan, I'm pathologically optimistic. So that's part of being an activist.
Hey, somebody has to be, that's for sure. Megan, do you want to round out this, make any more points before we take a break and come back?
I just want to say I've 100% moved on, have not gloated. And I think if you have not moved on, you're not paying attention to the issues that are happening right now. And they are affecting many of us day to day to day to day to day. And mask or not mask is not the impending disaster that Roe v. Wade being overturned and many other issues that really are continuing to cost people's lives and, mm-hmm. and well-beings right now. So you got to move on.
Yeah, indeed. forgive, but don't forget. Let's say that. Also, just for what it's worth, I have not had COVID. I'm not gloating. I have no idea why. I have no idea how did this happen.
You might be immune.
Wow.
And we may find out some people are just immune.
You cannot have my...
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Blood. Nobody gets to take my blood out of I've seen all these articles that are like, if you haven't gotten COVID, you might be a super dodger and science wants to study. No.
A super dodger? You're like Mookie Betts.
Oh, great reference. No, that's where I draw the line. You're not going to study my blood. Please do not do that. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, a.k.a. Sanny Petty. And welcome back. I am here with Alyssa Mastromonaco, Amanda Nguyen, and Megan Gailey. We have almost reached the end of the show. Not quite the end of the show. We have a little housekeeping and then Sanny Petty. Okay. The Crooked Store just launched a bunch of new merch inspired by your favorite Crooked Media podcast, reminding you to unplug, reconnect, and get festive. New items include a log-off ornament, a Nog Save America mug. I'm mad that it took them this long.
I know. Felt like low-hanging Christmas merch fruit.
Low-hanging ornaments, if you will. and then there's new Hysteria merch, too, so definitely check that out.
This holiday season, every order from the Crooked Store will support Vote Save America's Every Last Vote Fund to make sure every voice can be heard in the face of unprecedented voter suppression. Get some gift shopping done at the Crooked Store, and while you're there, grab a thing or two for yourself. Head to crooked.com/store to check out the new arrivals now.
Okay, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty, aka Sanny Petty. You know what, Amanda, I'm gonna have you go first. Are you finding something to keep you sane, or are you feeling petty this week?
I'm so petty. Petty today. This is my first petty, and let me tell you why. So I travel a lot. I love my home. And every single morning this week, I've been woken up at 7 a.m. because of the construction. I am a night owl. Mm-hmm. And I know 7 a.m. to people, they're like, what? Like, we already, like, you know, ran, I don't know, a 5K or 10K. But for me, I am not up at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the construction has started every day at 7 a.m. And yeah, I'm really petty. So today I wrote an email to my leasing office. It was a little petty, but you know what? You know, it's just me. Okay. So,
I mean, what are the local, I mean, this is going to sound extremely Karen-ish, but like, are there local ordinance? I remember when I've lived places where they're not supposed to start before 8.
I know. I literally thought that today. I was like, I have written 75 laws. I have gotten the United Nations to pass things for the world unanimously. If I can get the United Nations to do this, I can get this construction company to start later. So yes, I'm feeling very petty. And I literally did think about starting a protest, you know, community organizing my building so that we go and, you know, we change some stuff. But yeah, very petty. It's my first petty. I thought about this today.
I have also looked up because my neighbors, old neighbors, were putting in a pool at one point, and I was like, I'm going to murder all of them. Yes. And I looked up what time things, and it was 7 a.m. And then I said, well, we got to change the law. We got to change the law. That's too early.
This is my next law.
Yes. Thank you.
The only thing is, like, during the summer in a hot place, sometimes like 7 to 9 a.m. is like the only time of day when you can do anything that's like manual.
But well, and then we got to factor in global warming, because it's like, why is it only unbearable to be outside from 7 to 9 a.m.? Because the earth is heating up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They should give you some kind of stipend, or at least issue you noise-canceling headphones or
Thank something. You.
Caroline
Thank
put you. Some in the Thank chat, you. Some headphones or some earplugs for you.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Yes, but the earplugs are a problem, because what if there's a fire and you don't hear the fire alarm? Sorry to be a downer, but this has crossed my mind before. Sorry, it has. I just needed to say that out loud.
Oh,
because I used to sleep with headphones until I thought about that, and then I stopped.
Yeah, that's Caroline says you'll still hear the alarm.
Okay, Caroline.
Yeah,
thanks for all the consumer testing.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see. I will go next. I know that spooky season is over for another almost year, which is fine. We took down our massive Halloween display in our yard recently, and it was an undertaking. But one thing I feel petty about is when stores were selling Halloween decorations, I saw this recurring thing that just drove me nuts. And that was like skeleton decorations that are made to look like animals, but the animals have ears. The skeletons have ears that would be cartilage and would not be part of the skeleton. Like, you see a cat skeleton in a store, the cat skeleton doesn't have two little points coming up. This cat's got a freaky little, they've got just a freaky little bean head. They don't have the ear. It's not
those
part
are
of the
anti-science skeletons.
Wow.
Yeah,
I saw a dog skeleton that had ears, and I was like, this is not correct. Like, if you must sell skeletons that look like the thing that they are, I guess humans and fish are kind of it. Because anything with, like, you know, any kind of ear thing, I just, it takes me out of it. It really ruins my, when I see one, it like makes me mad, and I want to turn around and like leave the Michaels or the, you know, wherever I'm doing my Halloween shopping. So that's what I feel petty about this week. No cartilage features on skeleton decorations, please.
It's fake news.
If you are interested in that, I highly recommend that you check out what scientists think dinosaurs could possibly look like.
Because the chicken things?
Yes, right? Oh. Do y'all know this? So obviously we only have bones, right, from these dinosaurs, but people are saying that these dinosaurs could actually look completely different, because if you look at the skeletons of like actual animals right now, and we were to draw them the way that, you know, these scientists draw the dinosaurs, our like rhinos and chickens would look so wild, like so different. It's hilarious. So if you feel strongly about a cat, I feel like you would like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm definitely going to look that up. Also, like, imagine the earth inhabited by like giant killer chickens. There's something so funny about that. So hilarious about that. Okay. Let's see. Alyssa. Petty or sanity?
Petty.
Okay.
Okay. So all of the people who love to, you know, wear their American flags as like a political statement, as if, you know, I'm American, yay. Okay. Here's my issue. The other day, I was driving into town and it was pouring rain. And all these people with their malevolent twerp Lee Zeldin signs and all of their like Trump 2024 signs had the American flag up, and it was raining. And the thing I think is wild is all of these people who use the flag as the symbol of their patriotism, thereby making them better than everybody else, literally don't know how to treat the flag. The flag doesn't hang on the ground. The flag doesn't, the flag comes down when it's going to rain. And I just think that it is, I mean, if the through line of today's episode is hypocrisy, I just wanted to round it out with how people who use the flag as their like, I love America, make America great. Look at me. Then there's one guy who drives around town that's got a flag on his truck and it's been on there for so long, it's like shredded and shit. I was like, you're not Paul Revere. Like, this is not. Anyways, that's my, if you're gonna have the flag, treat it right.
There are rules. There are rules.
And if I know them, they should.
I don't even care about the rules, but it's like you are so mad about kneeling.
That's exactly
and yet you
correct.
Would probably, if your dog shit and you ran out of newspaper, pick it up with the flag and yell at Colin Kaepernick. And it's like, okay, whatever, you psycho. Okay, well, you can obviously tell I'm going to pick Petty.
Yes, so, four petties. This is yes. a rare four petty week.
This is where we come. Okay, so we went to like a fall thing or pumpkins and stuff. And I know the holidays are upon us. And so traffic gets bad. Parking lots get really packed. We were trying to park in a parking spot that was designated for us because we had a handicap placard because there was someone in our car who was handicapped. And the person standing in, like they parked in the spot next to us, and then they stood in the parking spot, not to save it, but to just stand there and to futz around with their car and to brought their child around to that side. And I know that there's been data that when you see someone needs the parking space that you are occupying or you are blocking, people tend to go slower. If you are one of those people, I wish bad things for you. That is evil. That is bad. If you see someone need your parking space or the one next to you and you don't get a little clip in your step, fuck you.
Especially if it's a, especially if it's a disabled designated parking space.
Yeah, seriously.
And like, you know, I got out and fought. You know, I said, I made my mom get out of the car so I could get out and raised a big old stink. And then the woman tried to yell at me and it's like, no, you're wrong. Move.
She tried
There's
to yell at
you. There's studies on this that people walk slow. Like, what is it? Like, about control?
It's like that, you know, when you're like waiting and you see someone put the bag in their car and then they get in the car and just sit there. And it's like, what do you, people psychologically go slower.
Wow.
And it's like, I am literally like racing. Like, I'm like, hold me 1 second. Yeah. I'm like shoving Conrad in. I'm like, oh my God, directions. I don't need to know where I'm going. Like, let's all get in. Let's all get out. Let's all get in. Let's all, Trader Joe's directing traffic, like bending over backwards to try and like help accommodate as, because I just want everyone to be able to park. Yeah. And the fact that there's people that want to go slow and when she brought her daughter around, I'm like, you want your daughter to get hit? Like, what is happening?
Oh, are they wearing flags in the rain?
In the rain.
Yeah. Yeah, and carrying a cat skeleton with ears on it. yeah, Megan, that is how I got a ticket for using my cell phone while driving once, because I was in such a hurry to like vacate a spot and get out that I like didn't have my directions up. So I pulled out of this parking garage downtown and I was like, I literally just pulled up and I was just like looking down and making sure that the directions were right. And a cop on a bicycle pulled me over and gave me a ticket.
Oh, no.
I know.
No good deed.
Can't win for trying.
I know. I know. But he is a cop on a bicycle. So in a way, his life is probably not the greatest. Okay. On that note, that's all the time we have for this last Hysteria episode before Election Day. I hope everybody's voted. If you haven't voted, make a plan. If you have voted, bug everyone you know about voting. And Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Amanda and Megan, thank you for hanging out. We will be back next week. And I will probably have even less sleep. So
probably.
Yep. See you guys on the other side and take care and save democracy, please.
And vote.
Hysteria
Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Fiona Pastana is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroote.